accession number 28645, reel 14.
So that was that, and then of course there was the time in England. We had a terrible journey. First of all, we were driven out into the desert, and the car went into a buffalo.
You're now travelling from Egypt to England.
That's right, exactly. I don't know how we drifted away from that. Anyhow, so we drove out into the desert, we hit the buffalo, we managed to get the car going, though its front was in pieces, and we found the plane out in the desert. It was a Liberator. And there were two male journalists and one female journalist travelling with us. So there were five of us in a Liberator. There was no lining to the Liberator whatsoever. And they put us into flying suits. No, they didn't do that till Benghazi, that's right. No, over the desert we just flew in our ordinary clothes. Oh, and we had to get a vaccination beforehand. We had to get a smallpox vaccination, and the doctor refused to do it. But I can't remember. He had something against us, I think, because we were British or something. So we had to persuade him to do that. So we started off with our vaccination just done. And we arrived fairly safely in Benghazi, where we all disembarked because the thing had to refuel. And from then on, it being winter time, they said that the plane wasn't heated, so we would have to get into heated suits. The heated suits in those days, they were khaki, and they were stiffened, and it was like getting into a whole set of cricket pads. They were in sections like cricket pads, about so long, and all these stiffenings inside. And they were just as stiff as cricket pads, only they went the whole way up. Well, it took the pilot and the second pilot about 10 minutes to shake me into this thing, which they duly did, and the rest were being shaken in as well. We got into the plane, that was fine, and then we were given a lunch packet before we got into the plane. And the Egyptians who were seeing us, no, they weren't Egyptians, were they? Not in Benghazi. What were they? Moroccans, I suppose.
Benghazi is Libyan, isn't it?
Libya, that's right, Libyans. So they swarmed onto the plane before we left, and we all had our lunch packets stolen, mostly. And then we set off, and they went up to 24,000 feet, and the heat didn't work. And the oxygen didn't work. Fortunately, I was sitting behind my husband. I don't know why, I forget why. I think it was so that we weren't against the cold outer skin of the plane. And I saw him going two shades of green and purple. So I fetched the pilot. They just saved his life in time because his oxygen mask wasn't working, nor was mine. Then one of the journalists tried to turn on the heat in his suit, so he went on fire and we had to put him out. So we had no heat. We were at 24,000 feet. We had no heat. We had no oxygen. We were in a bad way, a very bad way. The pilot came down to 20,000, but it didn't help much. And it was so cold that I actually undid my suit and put my hands inside on my body to try and thaw them, because it was so cold. It was terrible. I got one of my magisterial headaches. We arrived. I didn't have time to go and be sick then, because they hustled us into taxis. And there we were, the five of us in the taxi, and we got to the middle of Lisbon, where two big avenues cross, and there's a statue in the middle, or there was then. And I said, that's it, you've got to let me out. And I was violently sick in the centre of Lisbon. the journalists were so charming. They all held my head and patted me on the back and everything. Oh dear, oh dear, oh dear. The places I've been ill with my headaches. And so then we finally got to the hotel and I slept it off and we had a lovely day the next day. We went and sightsaw and there were flowers and there was greenery and it was absolutely wonderful after 4 years of desert. And that was fine. Then we all piled into the plane again. And as we approached England, the pilot sent a message back.
You presumably had to fly deep out into the Atlantic.
I don't know what way we went. I've no idea.
The whole of France is still occupied, so you couldn't overfly it.
That's right. So I didn't ask. I think we went over the Bay of Biscay. And so as we approached, the pilot said, I'm sorry to have to tell you, we've got a very bad snowstorm, and I haven't really got any guarantee we're going to get down all right. So we landed in the snowstorm. We did get down all right. Out in Lynham we landed at. Lynham. How do you spell Lynham? L-Y-N-H-A-M?
Lynham? I thought it was L-I-N-E-H-A-M.
Ah, there is an E in it. Mm. Yes, I thought there was. Fine. And that was how we arrived in England.
And you spent exactly 2 years in England. February.
Well, I was there.
43 to February 45. Because in February 45 you joined Louis in
no, Paris. Wait a minute, it wasn't 43. Can't have been. No.
Well, you told me it was.
Yes, I know I did, but I'm in a mess with my dates. Don't be hard on me. It's a long time ago. No, wait a minute, it was 44 we landed, we came to England, not 43. It was 44.
Right. So you had 1 year.
That 1 year, yes. I helped my mother in the bookshop. My mother had just gone to bed. I was saying goodnight to her, and there was a little window in her room, fascinating little window, that looked out due south. And that was the 6th of June. And I saw something on fire in the sky. So I said to my mother, there's a plane on fire. I don't like the look of it much. I hope it's not going to land on us. And this thing came sputtering over, making that horrible noise that they used to make. And it landed somewhere out in the wilds beyond the town and exploded. And I said to my mother, well, that's a plane gone. That's sad. I hope the crew's all right. And then I realized a week later, they said nothing about it. Nothing about it whatsoever. And in the official books, they give the 13th of June as the date of the first flying bomb. And it wasn't. It was the 6th. Because I saw it. And they've never admitted to that flying bomb. They didn't admit to it then. They didn't tell us anything about it until they started coming over in droves on the 13th, and then they had to admit them. But that one never got admitted. So I reckon I saw the first one come over. After that, of course, it was flying bombs, and flying bombs. They used to come over every 3 hours. You could set your watch by them. They used to send them across in threes. And one of their routes was directly over our house.
At East Grinstead?
Yes. And they used to come over quite low, because they were getting towards, some of them were getting towards the end of their flight by then, of course. We had a balloon barrage put up in East Grinstead, which caught some of them. The church tower was just slightly to the side of our house, but not enough to be really comforting. And we just carried on. We slept on the ground floor because we weren't going to go out to the shelters every time, every 3 hours. So we just slept on the floor and set our watches by them. And then one fine morning, about 7:10, one came down in the middle of East Grinstead. Came in the middle of the cinema. Unfortunately, of course, it was one, let's say, 7:07 in the morning and not 7:07 at night. So it didn't kill anybody. But it was a most extraordinary sight because it didn't blow things in. It sucked them out, the explosion. And the whole of East Grinstead shops, the whole of the main street, all the things in the shops were sucked out into the middle of the street. So you had sort of bacon mixed up with clothes and things like that. Piles of these things in the middle of the street, it was quite extraordinary. And windows were, any windows that were broken, they weren't broken inwards, they were pulled out. Most extraordinary. And the whole of East Grinstead was out in its dressing gown, of course. So we had that amusement. And we used to watch them because they had one nice trick. The Spitfires would go up and wait for them. And then they'd, because of course the bombs flew faster than the Spitfires.
Did they?
Yes, they did 400 miles an hour. And I think the Spitfires did 300 and something. So the Spitfires were anyhow, they were up there waiting for them. And as they came along, they'd fly alongside, put their wingtip under the wingtip of the bomb and turn it over. Well, that was great for them. It wasn't so great for us underneath.
Did you ever see that done?
Yes, I used to go out and watch them doing it.
Watch it from the ground?
Yeah. Yes, it was quite exciting. And then the other thing we had, of course, was the 1,000 bomber raids. For some reason, I think 2 or 3 of them chose a line directly over our chimney. And they flew very low, so as not to be taken up, not to be sighted. And they shook everything off the mantel shelf. It was an extraordinary sound.
Yes.
Absolutely amazing. When they did one of those, I used to listen to them going out, and then I used to count them coming back, and that was very depressing. But the whole world shook when they went over. Amazing. So that was our excitement from June onwards. We had that to amuse us. Then, of course, we had the B-1s.
B-2s.
The B-2s. So they didn't come down round us as much. They seem to have got the distance better. They fell further in. But we went on just as usual. We went up to London. We did our business. We still journeyed to London. We took no notice. These wretched things kept dropping round us. But one didn't let it change one's life at all. You couldn't, because you had to go on. There was business to be done. Strange time. So that went on. Of course, the V1s tailed off when they got onto the V2s. And then it came to a time when Louis sort of said, I'd better go across and join him. And he sent a destroyer to fetch me from Portsmouth. And nobody told me. So I went by boat and train. And on the boat, I was up on deck because I never got seasick if I went into the fresh air. So I also usually went up into the prow of the boat. I was looking over the side, and to my horror, I saw a large mine coming towards us. Nobody saw it. I don't think they could have done much about it anyway. And this horrible thing drifted past the ship within about 3 feet. I was looking right down onto it, and I watched it go past. I don't think I've ever had my heart so far into my mouth as then. I can still see that thing. Anyhow, then I got to Paris. Stayed the night in Paris, and I drank the awful thing they called coffee, and that gave me another of my headaches. And Louis had sent a car to fetch me. When I arrived, he'd hardly speak to me. He was so angry with me for not taking the destroyer. And I couldn't persuade him that nobody told me it was there. I was very disappointed about that. I'd like to have arrived in a destroyer. Would have been nice. And then, of course, there was a very unhappy time in Brest.
Because of the family situation?
Yes.
And that lasted, what, some 6 months, didn't it, really?
No, we were in Paris from, I think we were there for May Day, which of course is a very important day, and the salon was open. I think it was beginning of May.
So you were only in Brest for 3 months?
Yes.
And when did you return to Cairo?
Oh, well, that was another business. Then my husband stayed in France. I went back to join my mother. And then he stayed over for meetings about the canal company. Then he came and joined us in England. And we went back to Egypt together from England.
Which would be when, roughly?
It must have been round about June, I would think.